Welcome to Kim School, a podcast created by the Seventh-day Adventist Kinship in Brazil. And I'm Ellen, and I'm co-hosting this first episode with two more friends, Allison and Vinny. This episode has a Portuguese version that is a bit more complete than this one, so check it out if you want to hear that version with a longer introduction and explanation. And today we're happy to talk to Kinship's international president, Floyd Punitz, and we're gonna ask him all the stories about Kinship's awesome beginning and the community development throughout the years. So let's go and stay tuned for this exciting episode right after the opening theme song. So hit it! Floyd, it's a pleasure having you here.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to be here with you guys. I've been looking forward to this.
Yeah, it's very heartwarming having you here as part of our podcast that we are creating here in Brazil now with Kin School. And I'm very happy to be part of this team because I don't know if you know, but I'm kind of a new member here. I think since June or July, I'm an official member, and I gotta tell you, I've learned so much until now, and it's been a very special experience. And we decided to prepare actually an interview with you because I don't know how to explain the situation we're facing here in Brazil right now, because we have so much going on here in terms of politics. You know, the church is going crazy, not just the Adventist church, but most churches here in Brazil. People are very divided, polarized.
A lot of prejudice.
Yeah, much prejudice. And now that we have the election finished since October 31st, we have here our new president coming, Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, and he's from the left-wing party, and the church is, oh no, Jesus
is
coming,
the time of the end.
The end of the time. Yeah, and we have some special haters, of course. They love to throw some hate on us, especially the LGBT Adventist community. And you know, I think it's important to have this place to talk about it, because most Adventists here in Brazil, they don't know about SDA Kinship. They don't know what it is and what it isn't. Some people think that it's a church, and we're not a church. We're just a community. We have a lot of confusion going on there, and people saying, so why are the church accepting these people?
And you know, sometimes people say, you can use the SDA, you can use Adventist in the name, so you are wrong.
Where are the lawyers? The Adventist lawyers, they say.
Yeah, and we can talk about that. Anytime I think of people don't understand what's happening, or they don't have a control over what's happening, they try to find someone to blame, and it's immediately prophecy is being fulfilled. It's the end of time because of this person or this group that we don't understand. So, you know, it's a normal thing that happens throughout history, and this is just one of those times that we'll come through this, and if Jesus comes again soon, that's wonderful, and if he doesn't, we'll just keep on until, you know, he does. So
yeah, we'll keep on hoping.
Exactly.
All right. So the first question we have here for you is, how and why did the SDA Kinship begin? And I think it's an important question we must know.
Exactly. To go back to the beginning, it was in the 1970s, actually, the late 1970s, when a gay Adventist person put a little ad in the back of a gay newspaper saying, I'm a gay Seventh-day Adventist. Are there any others like me? And I think it's important because most of us, when we realize that we're gay, when we can put that word with our feelings and say, hey, okay, I think that means I'm gay, we think we're the only ones in the whole world. It's a big secret, and you know, you can't share it, you can't tell someone else because they will reject you. So this person, and this happened to be in New York, put this ad in this magazine. And surprisingly, he got dozens of responses of people saying, hey, I'm Adventist too. I thought I was the only one. So it was very good. And about that same time, three different locations in the United States put an ad in. All of them thought they were the only ones, and they were looking for community. They were looking for a safe community, someone else to share the secret with if they couldn't tell anyone else. So that's kind of how it started, is the desire to have a safe community. And there was no email back then, so it was all written out in a letter or a call on the telephone, which was also expensive because you couldn't just call for free. So yeah, in the 70s. And at some point they said, hey, we really need to get together and see each other in person. So they decided to have the first camp meeting, and this was 1981. And they thought, hey, it would be really cool if the church could also get to know us and send some teachers, you know, professors, pastors, whatever, to this meeting. So the first person who placed that ad actually met with one of the General Conference leaders and said, hey, we're a group of gay Adventists. We're going to have a meeting to talk about it. We don't, you know, at that point, it wasn't a big study on what it means in the Bible and, you know, what does the Bible say about it. So this was all part of that camp meeting. And so the church said, okay, we will send, I think it was six pastors, faculty from Andrews University, and we will include one of the pastors who believes that he has a cure for homosexuality. He has to be in that group as well. That was Colin Cook. That was a stipulation. And so they planned this meeting in Arizona and found a campground that was kind of secluded, because you couldn't just tell people, hey, we're going to be a gay group meeting on your campsite. It was dangerous and pretty much illegal at that time still. So
too much.
Yeah. So they met and had a wonderful time together. I think it was several days, like almost a week that they met. And all of the allies, or all of the pastors and faculty that came, became allies and very strong supporters. They met with us. They got to know us. They went back to the General Conference and said, hey, these are really sincere people and they love God. They're gay. They didn't choose to be gay. They feel they were born that way. We studied the scriptures, and we recommend that the General Conference create a committee or something that works with this group. But the one person, the person who had the cure, he was the only one who did not become an ally. And he went on to start his own ministry with the church, the first conversion or change ministry. So he was not supportive of kinship, obviously. He wanted everyone to come to him, and he was going to change them. Actually, the church listened to him and began to support him financially with tithe money and everything else, and heavily supported his ministry, which is a whole nother story. But just briefly, he started this ministry. It was like an Exodus International, which is kind of a famous conversion therapy thing that was happening at that same time. But he ended up abusing. He said that the only way to convert these people into heterosexuals is to get naked with them and have these long hugs.
What?
Yeah, exactly. And the church bought into that and said, hey, you know, this is great. We're going to have all these heterosexuals now. Sadly, not a single one was converted or changed from homosexual to heterosexual, but he did really destroy a lot of lives. I mean, you can think that if you go to this person with your trust that, you know, he's from the church, he's going to help me, and then all he does is sexually abuse me. Most of those people, you know, some ended up committing suicide, some left the church, left God. It was really bad. And it was Kinship later on who exposed this. The church then withdrew the funds. They stopped paying for this, but never once did they say, oh, I'm sorry, we were wrong in doing this. They just kind of swept it under the carpet. This pastor, former pastor, is still alive, still believes that he can change people, even though he himself admits that he has not changed. He's still homosexual. He was gay and is gay. You know, he says, if you work my program, if you actually do it and pray hard enough, you can become straight. But the Holy Spirit has not allowed me to be converted to straight yet either. But God is still working on me, and he's 80 years old now or something like that. Anyway, that's a stain on the church as far as I see, because I would like the church to have said, hey, we were wrong in this support. We apologize to all the families of the people that came to you. And it was hundreds of Adventist boys who went there for this change. But yeah, that was the beginning. We had the camp meeting, and that was the beginning of all the camp meetings. We've had like 43 of them now, 42, 43 camp meetings. That's how long we've been around. And yeah, it's all about building community, getting to know that we're not the only ones, and just sharing the different things that we struggle with in trying to stay in the church and be LGBTQ.
Question. Why wasn't that guy arrested or something?
Yeah, good question.
Yeah. We feel that he should have been, but I don't know if it was the timing or what, but no one pressed charges. No one pressed charges with the families. He got off scot-free. He was doing this in Pennsylvania. And so once this happened, he packed up and he moved to Colorado and started the same thing again in Colorado, got caught again. And now he has converted it to a radio ministry only, where he doesn't have access to young boys, but he spreads the message on there. Well, he himself was obviously not healed, and he was just interested in almost pedophilia and just sexual abuse. He was an addict. Yeah. He was married at the time. His wife has left him. In the meantime, she said, "I can't support this." So yeah, sad story.
So I was thinking here, can you talk a little bit about the lawsuit?
Yeah. You know, after several years of existence, so this was not early on, this was at least 10 or more years into Kinship's existence, the church had not trademarked their own name. And at that point, they were wanting to trademark Seventh-day Adventist so that no one else could use it. There were splinter churches starting. A famous one is one in Hawaii, was calling themselves, I don't know, Seventh-day Adventist something or other. So they were using these names, and the church said, okay, we need to trademark our name. And they saw that Kinship was using Seventh-day Adventist Kinship International. And they said, okay, this is going to be confusing because somebody is going to read that and think that we support and advocate for Kinship. So they brought a lawsuit to us. Since we're registered in the state of California as a nonprofit organization, the trial was held in California, and there was a gay lawyer group that said, hey, we will do this for you pro bono. We won't charge you for this case. It actually went on for several years. It kind of drug out. At that point, I was just a member. I was not actively on the board, but the president and many in the organization had to appear in court, testify. And the thing that we were trying to prove or to say is we were not a church. We're not competing with the General Conference of Seventh-day Adventists. We're just a community, a supportive community for those Adventists who find themselves being gay, bi, trans, whatever. And the judge there listened to the case. She agreed with us and said that we were not trying to be a church. We're not imitating the Adventist church. We were simply providing a safe community, a support, where the church did not have a community for us available. So she ruled in our favor. The stipulations were that we could not become a church, proclaim that we're a church. We could not collect tithe to compete with the church because the church was afraid that we were going to collect all this tithe that they were going to miss out on. And so, you know, people can pay tithe to us, but we can't ask people to pay tithe or, you know, tithe to us. They can give us donations, offerings, that kind of thing. So we do have some members that actually are upset with the church and don't want their money to go to the Adventist church, and they do pay tithe or a partial tithe monthly to Kinship. But that was one of the stipulations, that we can't demand members to pay tithe to us. And that was pretty much it. And the church actually had to pay for court costs and damages. And we used that money then. At that time, it was during the AIDS, in the middle of the AIDS crisis. And that was a big concern, a big topic, obviously. So what we did was we took the money that the church paid and donated it to an AIDS organization to help AIDS patients. And so I think that was the only time in the church history, unknowing to the church, that they actually supported an AIDS, you know, benefit or whatever like that, an organization to help LGBT people who were HIV, AIDS. So yeah. And, you know, my feeling is that the church has never forgiven us or forgotten. I mean, I don't know that we had anything to forgive, but has never forgotten about this lawsuit. Many Adventists think that Kinship created the lawsuit, and that is not true. Kinship didn't create the lawsuit. The church brought the lawsuit to us and sued Kinship over the use of the name. After that, if there was any communication at all between the church and Kinship, it broke off. You know, that was during the time of Neil Wilson. Ted Wilson's father was president during much of that time. Yeah, there was some very bad blood, and there were letters written saying no church employee is ever allowed to attend a kinship function. If you're employed by the church, you're forbidden to interact, to come and minister to listen to participate in a kinship activity. Now, whether that letter is still on file, I don't know. I have not seen it myself, but it has been that time since the General Conference has refused to communicate with kinship, sadly.
I see their point, but I cannot understand how the church changed from being like kind of supportive and now they're holding grudges because of a situation they actually brought to themselves. I think it's very weird. It looks like they started off as being supportive and wow, they cannot change themselves. Being gay is like some people say in English, you can't pray away the gay, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's no such thing as a cure, a gay cure or a trans cure or whatever. And now here we are with the church not allowing people to become part of our community. And I think it's very important to discuss about this because, for example, last year I went through difficult times, hard times actually. I have some anxiety disorder, you know, a bit of depression. I don't know if I have a bipolar disorder going on or something. The fact is, last December in 2021, I was feeling so bad, but really, so bad. I couldn't sleep, I couldn't eat. My parents, they were all over me, very worried. I had a lot going on my mind. I was just tired because I know who I am since I'm a child. I kept it as a secret because, like, I was such an intense... I'm still such an intense Adventist, a leader in the church, and I was feeling very bad. And then I started therapy again, and my therapist, she's also Adventist, and she was so supportive. She told me something that I still think sometimes. She said to me, Ellen, you're not alone. There are people in church that they are facing the same problems as you are facing now, and you need to find those people. And then she showed me an Instagram account from a guy here in Brazil, and his name is Jonathan, and he's known on social media for being gay and Adventist. You know, people send a lot of hate on him for free, basically. But he's there talking to people and trying to negotiate with church that we're here, we exist, and the church still tries to keep us as a secret, unfortunately. They think that, oh, we don't have gays in the church, and if you are a Christian, you can't be gay or something like that. But because of my therapist, I found out about Jonathan, and then after that, I found out about kinship. And then I realized that God really answered my prayers. And instead of asking me for a change, He showed me a community where I could feel accepted, loved, things I have never found in the church. And I'm so thankful for that. I think it's very important not to lose track of this because kinship is very important. Even though the church says the opposite, it's not true at all. From my experience, I don't think this is true.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, we all grow up in the Adventist church and we love our church because it provided us, you know, a framework, a community growing up. But then when we realize this one thing about ourselves that we've known for a long, long time, but then we finally are able to put a word with it, whether it's queer, gay, homosexual, lesbian, whatever the word is, then all of a sudden we're a different person. We're like a leper and have a disease according to the church, but we've had this all along and they just didn't know that piece about us, but we're the same person we've always been. It's a topic the church doesn't want to deal with. The church being the General Conference, the structure, because I think more and more local pastors are willing to deal with it, but they're afraid of what happens if they become listening and supportive, then they may lose their job and they have a family, they have children to feed. You know, if you lose your job, then what? So they're not willing to take this step. So it all kind of goes back to the higher levels, the General Conference that's not willing. Everyone is afraid of Ted Wilson, you know. And Ted Wilson has an agenda. He wants to accomplish what his father wasn't able to accomplish. His father, you know, was president for a long time. He wanted to do some things and wasn't able to accomplish them. And so, you know, as much as I disapprove of Ted Wilson's leadership, I almost feel sorry for him that he's put a lot of weight on his shoulders. He feels that if he can get the church to a certain point, Jesus will come tomorrow. And so Jesus, God, is just waiting for Ted to get the church in line and ready. And then the second coming will come. And then we don't have to worry about women's ordination and women speaking in church. We don't have to worry about all the queer people that are in the church saying, hey, we're here too. We have all these things. We don't need to worry about them. Because if we worry about them now, we're going to delay the coming of Christ. And we want Jesus to come tomorrow. That's a lot of responsibility to put on your own shoulders. So in that aspect, I do feel sorry for him. You know, I write an email to him almost every month. And there's never a response. I don't know if he receives them. Maybe he does, maybe he doesn't. But I want him to know that we're still there. The church is still has millions of LGBTQIA people, plus their families and their allies. You know, if the church has 20 million members, it's very possible easily that there are 2 million queer Adventists in the church worldwide. I mean, you take the 10%, and 10% is a little high, but you take the 10%, take their families, take the allies, and it's easily over 10% of people that are on our side and want to support us, and the church is not allowing that. That's not just a small little number. That's quite a bit. But he refuses to acknowledge, you know, when he gives sermons, he talks about, it was funny because I had just written him a note about LGBTQIA+. I used that whole acronym at that time. That was last year. And before then, he always talked about gay people and homosexuals. But in that next sermon, he actually used the whole acronym. So I like to think that maybe he got one of my emails and was using that. But he said, you know, this group of people will never see heaven, is what he said. And he didn't talk about people who were in active relationships, people who were out cruising and doing things every day or whatever. He talked about the people, not the acts that they were doing. And you know, you can identify as gay and have never had sex or never been in a relationship, but know who you're attracted to. And he condemns all of these people.
Really? Like just by being?
If you say you're homosexual, if you say you're gay, you're condemned. You will not go to heaven, according to Ted Wilson. And that's what I try to point out to him. It's like, let's talk about this. I want to hear where you're coming from, but you need to hear my story as well. And the story of millions of other queer Adventists. Yeah, he refuses. Part of the kinship board recently met with someone in leadership position, and that's all I'll say to that. But the statement that was given was, the church will do what the church has to do, and kinship will do what kinship has to do. And that means the church will never, never reconsider its position, never change. The structure is there so that if it changes, it's going to have to change a lot of things the way it looks, and it's not ready for that. You know, as Ted Wilson says, he's getting ready for the second coming. We don't have time to change the church right now. We want Jesus to come. So that's so focused on distributing a billion copies of The Great Controversy worldwide. I'm sure you know about that as well. You know, we're more interested in doing that than taking the money and helping the homeless or the poor or those who actually need to know that someone cares about them, including the queer community.
No, I get that, because I may be wrong, but the impression I have is that when the church says about having a revival, they're talking about the things that the world acknowledge as being right and they don't agree with. For example, the LGBT community or people in general that are progressive people, you know, all these type of people. So it's like when we have a revival, we don't have any more, you know, all those things we need to end in church that are entering the doors and they think it's wrong. So in order for Jesus to come, we need to do what we have to do. So the church says, gays, you're out. And if you support them, you're wrong. You're gonna stay here with Satan forever, you know? And I don't know if you have watched a movie that came out this year, 2022. It's called You Can Live Forever. It's a Canadian movie. It's about two girls, a teenager called Jamie. The thing is, her dad dies and she goes to her aunt's house to live there for a while in order for her mom to go back on her feet. And she meets another girl, and her aunt and her uncle, they are Jehovah's Witnesses. Okay, so she needs to attend the meetings while she's there. Then she meets this girl called Marika, and they kind of fall in love. All the cliche, you know. I feel the pain that Marika feels because she fell in love with Jamie. Marika was so certain that Jehovah was coming back and the new system would be implemented here on Earth that she just decided to marry a guy because then the new system would come and she would have the opportunity to live forever with Jamie, with her. So she decided to marry a guy because then she would have a chance to be in the new system and be in the new system with the girl she loves as well. And I can understand that completely because that was something I had to deal with when I first fell in love with a girl. I was always thinking about God. Lord, I can't be with her because I want to go to heaven and I want to have her with me forever. You know, this is kind of the plot of the story of the movie. It's a very sensitive movie, also a sensible storyline. I think all people in church, they should watch this movie. It's a touching movie. But I think this is the battle that a lot of people face nowadays. They are battling because they love a same-sex person, but they also care for the eternal life. And it's very complicated, I think. So I understand when Ted Wilson says, we don't have time for that because Jesus is coming, and if Jesus is coming, we don't have to deal with that, because I was to think the same way.
I feel it's a little kind of dangerous if you think about you can do something to make Jesus come like faster. So yeah, you put a lot of pressure, a lot of like energy, and when it doesn't come, so it doesn't happen, you feel like a very frustrated, right?
Yes, yes.
And all your faith goes to bruh.
Right.
I feel like that.
Right, yes.
Like, I'm doing something wrong. I'm wrong. So, okay, let's change. I feel like that's very dangerous, like for ourselves. I don't know, for our mind. I don't know, to think about it. We have some power to change things.
I think it's very arrogant to feel that you can manipulate God.
Right.
And say, hey, you know, this is what I've done. Now, come on. You come to Earth and take us away. Because God knows already the beginning from the end. I mean, he knows when he's going to come and when the time is right. And he can't be manipulated into coming sooner or later or whatever. The time is there.
So I was also thinking something here. I have heard about some people, maybe they have some family in the church, like some people from high positions. And actually, they are LGBT, they are gay or lesbian, but they consider themselves like celibatory. And then the church, like, kind of like, you know, they cover all the things and, okay, we are not seeing anything.
Right, yeah. I mean, today it's hard to find a family that doesn't have someone who's a member of the queer rainbow community. I mean, most families have someone who's LGBTQIA something or other. And that includes our pastors, our church leaders. I mean, back to Ted, Ted's uncle was gay. Ted has a gay cousin. I mean, he has gay family members. Most of the pastors and evangelists in the United States, at least that I know, have gay children or queer children. And they either don't talk about them publicly because they would lose people who listen to them. Because if you have a gay child, it's the parent who gets blamed for what did you do wrong to make your child gay. And so if you have a popular evangelist who has a gay child, well, the evangelist must have done something wrong in their life, in their parenting skills, to have a gay child. So it's not talked about. Or the parent says, you're no longer my child. You have to leave my home. And that's, I know many families like that as well. We had that, several examples of that within kinship, of just the parent saying, I'm no longer paying your school, your tuition, your studies. You have to leave the home. You're not welcome welcome here anymore. So very sad, because that doesn't reflect a Christian response. Even if they believed or truly believed that being gay is wrong, that's not the way a Christian would normally deal with that child.
As the saying goes, love your neighbor as long as your neighbor's not a gay.
Sorry.
I haven't read that verse yet. I haven't come across it.
Okay, so let's move on to our next question. Floyd, first, when did you join the community? Second, could you tell us if there were any differences between the organization from the past and the organization from our present? For example, are there any major changes that the SDA can shift face throughout the years? How was it when you first joined the community?
Right, sure. Yeah, I first joined the very late 80s, somewhere around the late 1980s is when I first joined. I started getting the newsletter, and I was still married at that time. And that's a whole nother story we can talk about if you want to at some point about my personal journey. But when I first joined, I was still married, but I had the Connection newsletter come to my work address. It was in a plain brown envelope, but at least at work, it just blended in with everything else. And my wife wouldn't have said, hey, what is this? Because I wanted to see what other gay Adventists looked like. Did they have three eyes? Did they have a horn coming out of the side of their head? You know, what was it? Because I didn't know any other gay Adventists. So I wanted to see what they looked like, what they did, what they talked about. And at that time, the Kinship Connection, the newsletter, came out every month. And it had lots of pictures, lots of stories, talked about camp meetings. So, you know, that was my first introduction to Kinship. And it was a few years later then that I divorced, decided, hey, I want to be a part of this organization. I want to tell my story. I want to help other people who are just coming out. So I went to a board meeting. My very first connection with other people was to attend a board meeting that was happening in Southern California. And then the following year, I went to my first camp meeting. So yeah, that was when I first became involved and kind of jumped in. That was before email. Soon after that, I changed jobs and I went to work for Microsoft. And email was then introduced into my life. And I went to the organization. And I said, hey, we need to communicate with our members via email. And they went, oh, no one has email. That's never going to work. Don't even bother with it. And then today, hey, we're talking on Zoom. So,
how right. The table turns, right?
Yes, technology has just zoomed like crazy. So yeah, and the organization, you know, it's determined by the leaders, you know, the leaders, how much time and effort they have to put into it and what their vision and goal is. For many years, we were just trying to identify that we exist and that we are valid in our feelings and our love for someone of the same gender. So we were trying to find, you know, what does the Bible really say? What do the clobber texts say? Do they condemn us? Do they not condemn us? We were just validating kind of ourselves and connecting other people. We had a few families, a few allies that joined, but it was mostly the LGBT. At that time, it was LGB. The T wasn't even really added yet, and that came fortunately later. And it's been a progress, you know, adding more people, more identities to that. And then I was vice president. I've, you know, been a part of the board for a long time. Now I've been president for almost 2 years, I guess. So what I want to shift the organization from being just this club where you join and you become part of this little secret club of gay Adventists to something that is a movement that is going to grow, because our voices really don't count all that much when it comes to church and leadership. But those of us who support us, our allies, our parents, those voices have more meaning and carry more weight. So what I'd like to see Kinship turning this big ship around that we're on and become a movement, actually, that we gather more people that support us. And, you know, as the voice gets louder, you can't ignore that voice anymore. And so that's what I see. The church at some point can't ignore us, can't say that we don't exist. When we have parents on our sides, when we have allies, when we have pastors, professors in the universities that are thinking and have studied and support us, when they start speaking out, it's going to be a voice that's so loud that whether it's Ted or Ayrton or whoever the president might be at that time, you know, they can't ignore us anymore. They have to say, hey, we exist. and we need to talk with you, or something like that. That's my goal, is to actually grow. I'm really happy with the growth in Brazil, the growth that you guys, the leadership team, is doing in getting the word out. I'm the one who usually gets the new members and processes them and passes them on. Every week we have new members from Brazil, so I pass them on to you, and it's just, it warms my heart, and I'm so excited, and I just want to know, how do you guys do it, you know, because I think so much in America, the people are Laodicea, you know, they're tired of the church, they're just lukewarm, they find their own communities and they move on, so we don't get as many new members here in America. So I'm just thrilled about you guys, and I know you're spreading the message and saying kinship exists, let's talk, let's discuss this, and I think that's what counts, is, you know, once you actually have a discussion that you talk about the subject and don't sweep it under the rug, it changes people's hearts. The Holy Spirit then has the opportunity to work on people and change hearts. That's what's happening, I see.
You know, we have a motto here in Brazil where we say, I'm a Brazilian and I give up never.
Good, good. That is awesome. Yeah.
Okay, could you tell us a little bit about the current project that our community has and the projects the team of volunteers wants to implement in the near future?
Yeah, so I talk about the Kinship Board. It's an all-volunteer board, so we're always looking for new people to volunteer to join with us and help with us. There's always new things coming up. We were doing the Unclobber Project, which was the book written by Colby Martin. He's an evangelical pastor who on his own said, hey, I don't believe we need to discriminate against the queer community. I'm going to study the texts. And he got fired from his church for being a supportive pastor. You know, so it happens outside of the Adventist church as well, not just within Adventism. But he wrote this book called Unclobber, which is not a big book, but I think it's a very good book in that it really describes the six clobber texts in an easy way to understand without using a lot of theological jargon and terms. So it's a book that the layman can understand if they're willing to open their mind to looking at texts a different way than they're used to. So the Unclobber Project, we've had that, and I think the book is maybe being translated into Portuguese. I'm not sure. Right now it's available only in English and in Spanish. But it's the Unclobber Project. Alicia Johnston has written a book called, I have it behind me here, The Bible and LGBTQ Adventists, and it's written from a very Adventist point of view. Alicia Johnston was an Adventist pastor until she came out as bisexual. Then she turned in her credentials, knowing that the church would not have allowed her to continue. She's written a very detailed book about the clobber texts and what it means to be a queer Adventist. And, you know, I think she covers almost every objection in that book, you know, that an Adventist could have. Yes, but, and then Alicia explains that. So I think Zelota is translating that book. Am I correct?
Yeah, I don't know.
That's my understanding, is that either the team or someone at Zelota is translating that to make that available in the near future for Portuguese-speaking people, readers. So that's a project. She's also doing some YouTube videos and exposing change ministries like Coming Out Ministries. I know that they come to Brazil often and present their message of pray away the gay. And so she's done some YouTube videos on the dangers of that. You know, sadly, a lot of these projects are in English, and so that limits the effectiveness for the Brazilian population somewhat. So yeah, so we're doing that. You know, I'm doing a podcast called Kinship Connects, where I'm doing something like this, and I talk with members and get their experience. And that was kind of on a pause now, and it's going to start again in January. Kendra Arsenault has done the Imago Gay podcast, and she and Roxanne have tackled some really interesting topics. Kendra was doing a podcast there at Andrews until she also came out as bisexual, and the North American division said, okay, as of now, you're fired. And you,
bye.
Yeah, bye. Not even thank you, just bye. So she's done some great stuff in conjunction with Spectrum Magazine and Kinship, and will continue to do some things in the new year with that. Yeah, Catherine Taylor, our current vice president, has done a lot of building safe places, Zooms like this, where she brings in one of the professors from Newbold College, former professors at Newbold College in England, in London, England. England. Tom was also a little too gay supportive. And so the college said, okay, we don't need you anymore as a professor. You're too liberal with your thinking, so bye. So he has been doing a lot of work on the clobber texts and how to build an affirming theology, things like that with kinship. So we have a lot of Zooms, thanks to the pandemic. That was a blessing that came out of the pandemic, is being able to share with around the world on the Zooms. Just recently, the leader in Kenya, Africa, did a training with 60 pastors and talked about what it means to be gay and Adventist in Africa, in Kenya. The hopes are that these 60 pastors will then go and share that news with their colleagues, with other pastors, to get that going. So that's a new project that we've been working on and supporting. Brazil has recently had a mini camp meeting in São Paulo. I don't know if any of the listeners were able to attend that, but Marcos was there and many of the team to put that together. So that was good. So there's great things happening almost all around the world. European kinship meeting this past year was held in Switzerland. And we had many of the church leaders attend, and they nodded their heads and they said, yes, we support you. And so that's exciting. This next year, the European Kinship Meeting will be in Germany, and it will be held on the campus of an Adventist college. So the thing to say, though, is the college did not invite us. We're there as a guest, just like any other guest can use the facilities. But they do have permission. They do know that we're the kinship group, we're the queer Adventist group, and everyone approved of that. So that is nice. So in Europe, things are really moving forward as well. So we're happy about that.
Oh, that's nice. So not all people are like the general conference, right?
No,
places, they are more open.
And that's important to say. You know, we sometimes focus on the negative. The general conference, Ted Wilson, you know, the ignorance that they try to perpetuate. But we really do have a lot of wonderful church leaders around the world who are supportive, who, when they're talking to you and me, they'll let you know. Maybe they can't stand up front in church on Sabbath morning and say that, but they are supportive and they try, you know, in their sermons to not say anything negative about us. They can't say anything positive, but they also won't say anything negative or discriminate against us. And so that's a step forward. So yeah, we do have some great things. In Australia, the same way. We have some very supportive people in Australia. Colombia, we have a lot of activity going on in Colombia and in Chile. You know, some of the Spanish-speaking countries in South and Central America. So things are moving forward. I'm optimistic.
Amazing. That's amazing. Thank you. It's very good news. I think we have three more questions, but these questions, they are from Vinny, our friend that is here with us. Vinny is a trans woman and she takes an active part in kin school, and she came up with interesting questions here about your personal experience being Adventist. And her first question is, how did you face the deconstruction process of fearing losing your salvation, which was put inside our head by the church throughout the years? And second question, what is your favorite story from the Bible related to the LGBT people on some level? And third, what advice would you give for our new kinshippers? Take your time to answer these questions in the order you feel most comfortable.
You know, my favorite text, I think about that. There's a lot of beautiful texts, but I go back to just the traditional one that so many people say, and that's always John 3:16. You know, and through the years it changes, but lately I find myself going back to that one because it says, whosoever, and that means everybody. So God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in him shall not perish but have everlasting life. And I really, these days, are holding on to that whosoever part of it. It's like, you know, the church doesn't have a right to say who that whosoever group is. God says anyone who believes on him and has faith in him will have eternal life. So there's no conditions. It's not whosoever is and then gives a whole list. It just, that's it, whosoever. So I really, really love and appreciate that. When I was coming out, and again, my story is a complicated, long story of getting married, wanting to be a pastor, getting married because I thought that's what God wanted. And if I stepped out in faith, God would take care of the rest and he would make me straight. And after 6 years of marriage, I decided that I actually started, instead of telling God what I wanted, I started listening to God's voice talking back to me. I decided I needed to shut up and let God talk. And God was telling me that I was okay the way I was, that I didn't need to change. And at that point, I decided it was unfair to my wife at that time to be married to me. And that it was unfair to me, that God had more in store for both of us than what I could provide for her and her for me. So we divorced after 6 years. At that point, it was very important for me to be clear what the Bible said. And, I didn't want to live against what God wanted me to be. If he said that being gay was a sin, then I would have to deal with that. I would have to be celibate. I would have to be whatever. So, I really studied Sodom and Gomorrah, into Leviticus, into Romans, Corinthians, dug deep into what the original language was. I had not an Adventist pastor, but there was a Baptist pastor who was gay, and he led these Bible studies, and we studied and we talked a lot. I came to the very clear conclusion that those Bible texts were not talking about me at all. They were talking about someone who was raping people, who was taking advantage of people. Nothing about my love for someone else or my attraction for someone else, or even how I expressed that attraction, had nothing to do with what these people were actually doing, physically doing in these texts. That just kind of like brought the weight off my shoulders. And I had no doubt at that point or ever since that God loves me just as I am, as a gay man loving another gay man. And now I'm in a wonderful relationship, and I think God blesses that relationship as well and understands. And I actually think that, I've come to the conclusion that my being gay is actually a blessing from God. It's not a curse. It's not just another circumstance in life. I think he allowed me to be gay. He knew I was going to be gay long before I came out of my mother's womb, so it was in store for me. It was planned. So I thank God for my gayness. It took a while to get there, but I believe that. And so it was important to know those Bible texts and to understand that I'm not condemned by God, because again, whosoever believeth in me has eternal life. That was very important. My favorite Bible story, it changes over the years, but again, I've come back recently to the David and Jonathan story. I really like that story because we really don't know what their relationship was, and it's really none of our business. But just like it's not the church's business to know what my relationship is with anyone else, whatever. But I think it's a beautiful story of whether it's a love or whether it's a deep friendship, respect, mutual, whatever, attraction, just the dynamics of that story. I find comfort in reading it. And I think it's a beautiful story. All the other ones are also beautiful stories. The centurion, the Naomi, and all of those. I think we can find strength and meaning in all of those stories. But yeah, David and Jonathan, I picture them as this cute couple or cute friends or whatever, we build the story in our heads. So yeah, it's a good story for me. And the last question is what my advice is to people coming to kinship. Great question. It's don't expect to know the answers. I think life is a journey and you don't know all the answers right now, because as soon as you get the answer to this question, that brings up another question and another way of looking at things. And so I think life would be boring if we came to the end and had the answer to all of our questions today. That's like, okay, what's the use of tomorrow? Don't expect to have all the answers. Enjoy the life that God has blessed you with today. And if things are not looking good in the church, in the family, hang in there. That's what the kinship community is for. That's why we're there to help each other through these difficult times. And most likely the sun is going to come up tomorrow, and it might be a better day. It'll be a different day for sure. And it, could very well be a better day. But let's all work together and share our stories, because each of our story is unique and important. And if the church or the church leadership can hear our stories, it will make a difference if they have any kind of heart at all. Any kind of compassion, hearing these stories will help them understand our community better and know that, it's not something that we chose to be gay. It's something that we have dealt with for a long, long time, long before they knew we were dealing with it. And God has given us strength to make it this far, and God is on our side. So yeah, get involved, have fun with kinship, have fun with your queerness. It's okay to be a little bit crazy sometimes. Just enjoy life. Smile a lot, enjoy life, do something out of your comfort zone. So hopefully that helps a little bit.
So you are telling things do get better, right?
They do get better, yes.
So I have a last question.
Okay.
So how can people help kinship?
Everyone has talents, different talents. We don't all have the same talent. I can't do what most of you are able to do with graphics and wonderful things and audio and all of that. So, you know, we all have talents. And if you have an hour a week, an hour a day, an hour a month, or just a little of time, contact your kinship leaders. They're in Brazil. Contact the leadership team. Find out what needs to be done and where they can help. We always need help with translations. That's a big thing of translating into English, from English into Portuguese. And maybe, you know, you guys know what your needs are the best. We need financial donations to help support things, even if it's just a small amount each month or whatever, instead of having a cup of coffee somewhere or having a dessert, skip the dessert and donate that money to kinship or something like that. So we need finances. We need talent helping with audio and programming, maybe even presenting things. We definitely need everyone's prayer. Everyone can pray. Remember kinship and the leadership in your prayers each day, if possible.
So to help financially, they need to enter on the website, right?
To donate to Kinship International, they can do that on the website. At this point, I don't believe that Kinship Brazil has a bank account yet, but I'm hoping that in the near future that we can set up a bank account there where people can donate locally. It's much easier. You save the conversion fees between and the bank fees and things like that. So if we could do something where they could donate locally in Brazil, that would be great. But we have a lot of Brazilians that are living in the United States, and so they can easily do Venmo. We have Venmo now. We have Zelle, PayPal, all of these things to easily donate to the American Brazilian Fund. So we have a fund in our bank account that is designated for Brazil. So that's like where the camp meeting, the mini camp meeting funds came out of. So if you want to support that, it's easy to support the U.S. and then we can easily transfer the money to wherever it needs to go.
That's great. Thank you so much, Floyd.
Ah, you're welcome. It's been my pleasure.
We spent like a great amount of time here, and it was a blessing, I believe, to all
anytime,
of us.
Anytime.
I'm very happy. So I think that this was a good start for our podcast, because I know we're going to have some fans that they actually will be haters.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure.
They're going to just listen to our podcast to have material to send free hate on the
condemn
internet.
Us.
And that's okay. Sometimes our best advertising is coming from haters. So that's great.
Right? I have seen that.
Yeah. It's great either way, because we all know that church grew through a lot of problems in the past and difficulties and persecution, and some people died and we're here today. And I try to believe we're here following Christ's steps. So we're going to suffer, because if Christ suffered, we're going to suffer too. And that's okay, because at the end of the day, we're going to have a heavenly Father or Heavenly Mother, whatever, that takes care of us. And I think that's beautiful. And this is what really matters.
Yeah. And I'm really excited about the future for Brazil, for our community in Brazil. I think there's a lot of good things happening.
Sure.
I appreciate Zelota doing reporting on things and being an advocate for us, a voice for us in there, you know, in that area there that they reach out to. During difficult, bad times, there's always a seed that sprouts up, that a beautiful new plant or whatever comes out of. I'm hoping that things will change, and the winds of change are for the good, for the better there in Brazil.
Amen.
Yeah, it's been my privilege. Good to see all of you. Yeah, let's do it again sometime.
No, the pleasure is ours.
Obrigado, obrigada.